previously on Getting the Mecha.
It's just those differences and nuances, it's easier to discuss those, and that's something which I've been trying to do. And that is made a lot easier by understanding the creatives. So understanding the creatives is a lesson I've kind of learned. If anything, it's exciting because you feel as if you're recognizing how an artist works and how they operate and what they really enjoy. I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Guests in the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Guests in the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode, normal episodes are back. I'm excited to be doing the podcast as normal, and in today's episode, episode 91, we are going to be doing my annual mid-year review. Just to clarify, the mid-year review, and I'll explain it a bit more later, the mid-year review isn't really me looking at anime so far this year, or at least in explicit detail. I'm not going to be talking about this anime, that anime, but I'm going to be talking about the lessons I've learned from this year in regards to anime as a whole, and putting it a bit more into context in relation to the industry and a few other things. As always, if you do enjoy these episodes, be it the mini-sodes from before or this episode and the normal episodes, it would be lovely if you could leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts to really help out the show algorithmically. But anyway, let's get into the episode for this week. That is episode 91 of Guests in the Mecha, the annual mid-year review or lessons I've learned about anime this year. Guests in the Mecha has always been concerned with analysis and trying to understand anime and manga much more, and so pretty much twice a year, what I do is one of these reviews where I talk about what I've learned about anime, and I usually title it Lessons, Anime Lessons for the Year, or Things I've Learned About Anime, or something like that. It's really an attempt to try and understand what they're like in terms of the industries they're part of and just the things themselves rather than specific anime and the things I like and dislike about that, because it's all good looking at those, but what does that really mean in the wider picture? And so I try to give it a bit more context in these episodes. So for those who are new, this is just a bit of a reflective episode and some broad brushstrokes over some news-related topics and general things that I've picked up on over the past few months, especially with the mini-sodes, which were very focused on specific and almost micro-analysis. I think now is a great time to just take a step back and put it all into perspective and in the larger context of the world, and also just anime and manga as a whole. Again, similarly to what I said before, putting it in the context of the industry they're part of and just the wider context, as I just said. And so if you came here for specific reviews of anime in 2021 from the seasons, then I'm sorry, but you're probably in the wrong place. There are loads of other podcasts that are covering seasonal anime. I personally don't do seasonal anime reviews as a whole. I do look at specific shows, but I usually refrain from doing this season or winter season, spring season. I'm not really covering those in this episode. I will touch on one or two that exist, but it's not really my review of the show. And so in this edition of the mid-year review, I have two lessons. I usually have about three or four, which are much shorter, but these are probably two pretty dense ones. So let's get into these. The first lesson that I've learned, and it's a bit more of a wake-up call more than anything, is that the industry is not in a very good state at the moment. Or to be accurate, the state of the industry is worsening. It's not to say that the things we've been seeing lately are new, but it's becoming, and it feels like it's becoming much more common. Potentially that's just because we're inside more and we're seeing what is going on more, but I also think that this is simply just the direction that the industry is going, unfortunately. This isn't a surprise because it's been a topic for years on end and is something that the anime industry has run on for decades, being overwork and insanely tight schedules. But it feels like right now and in this climate, things are just clamping down much more. As I said before, it wasn't much of a surprise, but I think that this really hit the hardest during the production of One Direct Priority, which caused a lot of staff, a lot of, I'm going to put it very lightly, or hassle in quotation marks. That's the most light way of putting it, but it's much more than that. Through the tweets of producer Mahara, for example, you can see and understand how much crunch they went through just to get this anime out. And it's just a lot of stuff went through a lot of work to make this anime watchable and actually complete thing which was able to go out. I love this anime, that's the thing. But I feel like it's very difficult to separate the work itself from what took place behind the scenes. I think Wonder Egg will be defined as, for me anyway, an amazing narrative and one of my favorite anime ever, potentially. But it will also and always be tainted by a very dark side to it, being its production and the dark side of the anime industry, which unfortunately has been present for a very long time now. Anime has never been an easy thing to make, and I think the more I watch production-related videos and I look at the work of staff and all the things they've gone through, and again looking at One Direct as a case study, it has never been easy. But I think with the state of the world at the moment, but also the state of the industry in its overproduction mode and the fact that it's also in a place in which it overworks its workers, I think that there are a series of intersecting factors that make it and make anime production even harder and more grueling than it needs to be. And when we add the low wage problem and, as I said before, overwork, everything is made more intense than it should be. And I think that's really the problem with the anime industry. There are some issues that are arguably bigger than others, but I think a lot of these issues are tied together, and that's what's really struck me in recent times. I will try my best in the show notes and the descriptions for these episodes to put links to some resources if you want to check out stuff regarding the low wage problem in the anime industry, and also some of the things I'm referencing regarding overproduction in the industry too. So you can also, if you're not aware of these things, you can get a bit more informed on these issues. I mentioned overproduction, and I think this becomes even more apparent with Kadokawa's very questionable statement on how it's their target to produce 40 anime a year until 2023. And they were already hitting this target from what I read, and they said it in the statement. Again, I'll put a link in the description for this. They were already kind of hitting this, but I think it just sets a very dark tone for where the industry is going right now. It prioritizes growth rather than sustainability or genuine sustainability and health of its essential workers. It decides to push it forward and make and stress this machine until it simply can't function anymore. And it just shows where their priorities lie, regardless of whether they were hitting it or not. I think it's just the message it puts out there. I just don't think that growth is really the way to go in a time like this, where in fact growth has been the problem. And one of the overwhelming problems with the anime industry is the fact that it's doing too much. And the fact that too much anime is being made means that those who are actually making it cannot keep up. It's not possible. And when you're being paid not enough or not nearly enough, growth only intensifies the problem. And that is what is pushing people out of the industry rather than bringing them in. And it's really unfortunate because when you look at some articles and what maybe a lot more of the Western mainstream media is focusing on, which is Demon Slayer, and anime is bigger than it ever has been before. There's so much money going around. But that is unfortunate. Growth, yes, anime is growing. And I think, you know, Demon Slayer doing well is good for anime, but when you realize who is getting that money and where that is going, you realize that this is actually much more problematic than it looks. Yes, Demon Slayer is bringing in loads of money, but who is getting most of the money? It's not the mangaka, and nor is it the animators. And that is really showing the exploitative and unfair side of this industry. I personally don't think growth and this growth-oriented approach is the answer when the fundamental problem of the industry is growth. And you want to grow, but you also don't want to put any support into those who are actively trying their best to make this thing work and support this growth-based approach. And so that's really the contradiction there. At least on a bit more of a optimistic, or at least semi-optimistic note, I do think that the good thing about this situation, and it's more so bittersweet rather than good. I don't want to frame this as a good thing at all, but it's more so that the community, the wider anime community, I think has become a bit more aware of how this affects the anime they consume, which, as I said, is a bit bittersweet because I do wish we were in a time where this wasn't a thing that people had to completely learn about because it would be all good. But in fact, it isn't. And so it's good that I think people are inquiring more and understanding more that this is the problem behind anime, and anime is not all sunshines and rainbows. And, you know, this quick, easy thing to make when people talk about digital art and how, yeah, it's so easy now. No, it's not. It's just as hard, and the things going on behind the scenes are only worsening. The overall lesson from this, I think, is just to pay more attention to the industry and the state of affairs when it comes to the things you consume. I was already doing this, but I think it only rubbed it in much more that this is a thing to pay much more attention to. You can't really think about animation without thinking about the thing which underpins animation, which is animation production. Yeah, we often talk about how animation has no limitations, but the true limitation behind animation is its production. Productions are not limitless, and in theory, it is limitless. Animation is limitless, but with the state of the industry, that is really what will limit and hamper the most ambitious anime, as we've seen with something like One Direct Priority. So as I was saying, sorry, the lesson from this is really to pay attention to the state of affairs and the industry in which controls the anime in which you consume. Generally, I think it's a good idea to read around what you consume, not just because whether it's exploitative or not, and it affects the anime you watch, but I also think it will make you appreciate it much more. On a bit more of a lighter note, the second lesson, which kind of relates to the first, is that credits are important. I want to step away from the negative is important, but I think we're getting into a bit more of a nicer point here. So what credits do I mean specifically? I'm not telling you, this podcast as a whole, just to clarify, isn't me trying to tell you what you should do. It's most of the lessons I've learned, and I kind of frame it like what you should do, but it's not really you. I'm just speaking generally here. So don't feel implored to do any of the things I say. I'm not trying to teach you things or tell you what to do. It's more so what I've learned and just pulling it out there. But as I was saying, what credits am I talking about? I'm talking about three specific credits. I'm talking about storyboard credit, I'm talking about the episode direction credit, and I am talking about the animation direction credit. I've been doing a bit of a deep dive into direction, primarily on TV series and short films, just trying to explore the work of a lot less mainstream directors, and I've been naming them non-cult directors. So I'm trying to move away from, you know, just this is something I see in this, the content sphere in general. There is a lot of analysis in regards to filmmakers like Satoshi Kon or Hayao Miyazaki and so forth, but I see a lot less analysis on these much smaller directors who are still very relevant in the industry, but maybe just don't have that much name and maybe even traction when it comes to a YouTube video, for example. So I've been doing a deep dive into the direction of directors, say, Yasuhiro Yoshioda, the director of Time of Eve and Harmony, but also Paterna Inverted. I've also been looking at Morio Asuka, who you might know from Chiafuru and Nana, Akitoshi Yokoyama, who directed an Ultraman short in the Japan Animator Expo anthology, and a few other things, and also Teichi Takaguchi as well, who directed another short, Grandfather's Lamp, which is one of my favorite shorts that I've watched recently. And of course, Hiroyuki Okihara, director of Jinro, Letter to Momo, Robot on the Road, and it's just a very big animator. Unfortunately, they haven't directed much, but they've done a lot of great work in the direction sphere anyway. Okihara is probably a bit more popular than the rest of these directors, but probably not as popular as those in his time, which is really weird for some reason, when I think he's probably one of the best or better directors of his time anyway. And then there's Atsuko Ishizuka, who you might know from A Place Further in the Universe, and she also directed what I believe, or sorry, storyboarded, if I'm speaking correctly, the final two episodes of the Ai Bungaku series, which are splendid and two of my favorite episodes in the anthology. But the point is that these credits are so important in the case of TV anime because they're essentially what glue the show together. We have to acknowledge that the show isn't just directed and boarded by one person, something that I don't really have a qualm with, but I notice a lot when a lot of people speak about Evangelion online. They often talk about every episode, they're often saying Anno, and Anno has a role in this, but there are also people that have directed a lot of those episodes that aren't Anno specifically, or more so they directed the episodes and storyboarded them too. For example, Masayuki is a massive part of what makes Evangelion what it is. But yeah, we have to acknowledge that the show isn't direct and boarded by one individual, but has a series of directors and storyboard artists and animation directors on it. When I reference animation directors, for those who don't know, these are basically usually veteran animators that correct the drawings before they go to another phase of the production. So I believe they will do corrections on the layout and they might even redraw the cut altogether, but they will retouch the layout phase, which is kind of like a rough animation in simple terms. And then after, when that's touched up in the Genga phase, or the second layout, it's sometimes called, then they'll do corrections again sometimes. And what I also understand about this, which I'll kind of get to in one of our examples, is that they actually have some influence, or they can have influence with how the models are drawn and approached throughout the episode, which will lead to a very special and has led to very special episodes of anime. This is often what guides the show and can really change how it operates as a whole. It really lets us into the influence of certain members of the team and the amount of control they have, and it's a really great way of understanding how something is working. Sometimes when there's a lot of consistency, by looking at credits, you're able to tell that this is consistent for this reason because it's held down by this staff member. Or for example, there's a lot of inconsistency because it's, you know, changed and veered differently by this certain member. And that's why looking at these credits are important. I'm speaking very theoretically here, so I think let's get into a few examples. Very recent one, and one that I just thought I'd throw in just because I love this series so much: Kai Karashi's presence on the Gridman series, storyboarding episode 9 of Gridman and episode 10 of Dino Zenon. It's extremely transformative to the show and the episode. The models take a completely different turn, or not completely, but they're much sharper. There's a bit more of distortion there. There's a lot less consistency, and it focuses more on these sharp shapes and just making them pop much more. And they're much more angular, if that makes any sense. I love these two episodes, and I'm sure those that do enjoy the Gridman series also love these two episodes too. His corrections and style are just so recognizable, and they give the characters this extra sense of drama and expression. And I also think about the Dino Zenon episode briefly, I'm not going to spoil it, but we get a much more visceral approach versus his previous Gridman episode 9. And I really love how even in the most dark of scenes, and when the characters play at their most realistic, at least visually, probably or ever in the series, Ikarashi still shines through. And that's really weird considering that Ikarashi isn't someone that's particularly known for his realism. If anything, he's known for not being that and moving away from that. So I think that just speaks a lot to the power of animation direction, where animation directors can have such a presence. This is a more extreme example, and I'm bringing up more extreme examples to show you how important it is, but they can do so much to how we understand and view a series as a whole, even by just having one episode dedicated to that. A much older and maybe a bit more obscure example to those listening, I recently watched Shinya Hiro's episode of the 90s OVA The Hakenden, which is a kind of samurai series. It's very difficult to explain because I don't even completely understand it myself. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not a massive fan of the show, but Shinya Hiro, one of arguably the best animators in the world right now, has an episode, and I believe this is episode, I am gonna forget, but it's one of the episodes in part 2 of the series, because the series as an OVA is split into a 6-episode series and a 7-episode series to make the whole series, which is like 13 episodes. And again, even though I wasn't completely moved by the series, this episode reminded me yet again why these things are so important and to take note of. In his episodes of the show, there's always something moving and flowing, and that's very much his style of animating, so his philosophy generally, and you see it come through his animation direction, and you also just see it through his direction generally, since he does storyboard and direct this episode too. It feels so uncomfortable and awkward, but that's in a very beautiful way. I mean that in the best way possible. And his unique presence and insights into just animation as a whole and just anime, it just shines throughout the entirety of the episode. And so if you are going to watch The Hakenden, I do recommend watching it for 3 episodes in particular. I recommend watching it for episode 1. I recommend watching it for the episode prior to Shinya Hiro's episode, which has Satoru Tsunomiya on it as well, who's also a phenomenal animation director and storyboard artist, even though I forgot the complete order of the credits, and then Shinya Hiro's episode, which comes right after that. It's just a beautiful insight into just the influence that a specific animator, one staff member, can have on the entire course and shape of an episode. And it stands out from almost every other episode as well. There are a few standout episodes. The 3 that I mentioned pretty much are those, but there are not many episodes, I think, of anime like that. It's a really rare episode that you have something like Shinya Hiro directing it and just getting that. It just feels like the Hakenden just took shape. It became a different anime. That's what I'm trying to say. Even if we move over to anthology series like the Aoi Bungaku series or Neo Tokyo, 2 of my favorite anthology series ever, or even a bit more of a popular one, Genius Party or The Animatrix, you learn that there are a myriad of different approaches and styles within a studio itself, for example. If we talk about Aoi Bungaku to be specific, or in English, Blue Literature, this is a showcase of the variety of talent and, again, different styles within Madhouse. Asuka Ishizuka is vastly different to the work of Morio Asuka, and Morio Asuka's work is insanely different to that of Ryosuke Nakamura, for example, who you might know from storyboarding and directing the 3rd opening of March Comes in Like a Lion, as well as the first, or I think there's only one, I don't know, but anyway, the opening for Your Lion April as well. These are so important to take note of because we avoid falling into the trap of thinking that an individual studio has a completely unified aesthetic. This is something you often get for something like A1 Pictures, where I think A1 Pictures has received this so brutally that they are this unitary body that they all produce this quote-unquote mediocre style anime and they all look the same. When in fact, a lot of these aesthetics are creator-driven, and a lot of the time are driven by the director of photography, as well as, of course, animation director, storyboard, and such like that. And so it's very difficult to tie down a studio to a specific look and aesthetic, which I think is something the anime community has fallen into a lot of the time. There are some cases where some studios are much more rooted in an aesthetic than others. If you look to that of Shaft and the influence of, say, Akio Kishimba, but also Tatsuya Oishi, there is a lot of unity there, and that is completely true, I agree. Or Kyoto Ani, for example, but you have to remember that an aesthetic often is guided by that and them and the creatives that work on it, rather than just the studio and the building. By paying attention to these credits, I think we learn a lot more about why certain anime look the way they look and how they're influenced by the people who make it. Anime, shocker, is made by actual people and it's made by individuals, and in a lot of cases they shape how the anime looks, and that's why it's so it sounds very obvious, but ironically I don't think enough of us do this. And I'm not really trying to, you know, I'm not trying to sound superior here and say, oh, I do this and no one else does. No, I'm just trying to say that I think it's a thing that more the community could learn from, because they'd actually learn a lot more by looking at the individuals rather than just looking at the studio name and making assumptions. The fact that we have a studio fan culture, I can't believe I'm saying that, but the fact that we do have this, and things that even go beyond that, that might not necessarily be the only reason for why individuals and directors don't get so much credit, but I think it's a big part of why they don't get much credit, because everything feels rooted in the studio. But the studio is only the tip of the iceberg in a lot of cases. The lesson here that I've learned is just to pay more attention to the individuals that make the thing. And in this specific case, I believe I spoke a lot about animators last year when I was speaking about this. If not, it was the year before last. I spoke about the individuals being the animators, but I think it's very important to pay big attention to directors, storyboard artists, and animation directors. It's a step away from reducing everything down to the homogenous studio or falling into budget reductionism, and also helps us understand where anime's identity is really sourced from. And so before I get too negative, this is a great time to end the episode, or at least to move to closing thoughts. So again, for those who are new to the podcast or the normal podcast, what I usually do is I just wrap up on some main points and just some takeaways for this episode, and then we will go off and I will see you again next week. So let's go to closing thoughts so far, and I will wrap up just briefly with the things we have discussed this episode. So what is the main thing you can take away from this episode? Two things really, or two very big subtitles, which are obviously the lessons from this week and from this mid-year review. Firstly, it's important to pay attention to the state of the anime industry at the moment, because that is what is affecting a lot of how anime is made right now, and also the rate in which it's made. It's also just important to pay attention to it, because it's important to pay attention to what you consume and what you're into. Anime is in a very bad place at the moment, and I don't know where it's really going to go from here. With overproduction and the what seems to be the bigger companies in this industry saying that we need to move forward, we need to grow even more, the industry is in a very dark place right now. We often talk about animation being limitless in theory, which it is, but in practice its limitations, and what we're seeing in the anime industry right now is the production side of it and what's going on behind the scenes. This is something which I have learned to just take in a lot more, and as I said, it's impossible to separate anime and the thing you enjoy, or I think it is, and just animation generally. It's impossible to split this from the production of it and how it's made, because the two things just completely bleed into each other and affect the final result. And then the second one and the final one, which is to pay more attention to credits. And specifically, I'm talking here directors or episode directors, storyboard artists, and animation directors as well. These are really crucial in the case of TV anime, because they are pretty much the glue to the show. And we can't really, again, separate the two from each other. these are what influence and control how certain things look, and again, how the final product ends up being. I think we also avoid a lot of reductionism by not just assuming one thing exists because of the studio. XYZ looks the way it looks because Bones, or because MAPPA, or because A1 Pictures, but it looks the way it looks in parts. There is a case to make for studios in some cases, but as I said, anime is made by individuals, and the individuals often and a lot of the time shape how the thing looks. By going down to the individual level, we can learn a lot more about how anime looks and why the way it looks the way it does, and where anime's identity is sourced from. Thank you for listening to this episode of Gats in the Mecha. That has been episode 91. I haven't said an episode number in so long, so that feels really good. Thank you for listening, as always. I said this before in the mini-sodes, but I also just want to say it again. Thank you for supporting those episodes so much. It's been the most consistent of episodes I've ever had, probably on this podcast so far. Usually, you know, when you talk about things that, you know, your audience might not listen to as much, like when I do a Monogatari series episode, that doesn't do as well as, say, me talking about Jujutsu Kaisen or something, or even Gellion, but I do it because I really enjoy it. And in the case of the minisodes, which were a risk, even though I know I do have quite a few like production fans in the audience, but I took a risk and I kind of just did it to fill some space, and it actually did really well. And so I also want to thank r/animesucker as well. That subreddit carried this show for the past 6 weeks. So if you are coming from that audience, thank you very much. And yeah, thank you so much for listening to these podcast episodes so far, and this one in particular. Next week, episode 92, I'll be back for something which will actually be mecha related. I know some people have said I don't speak about mecha very much. Well, I am, and I did kind of in this episode too, but mecha episode next week. And yes, thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Also, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star review. That could help the show a lot. If you are on YouTube as well, it would be great if you could like and subscribe and those sorts of things. And yeah, I will see you next week. Thank you for listening. I have been your Shimate, and this has been Gets in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. Synthwave by Alex, by Alex McCulloch. Difference by Chasers Gaming. Mandatory Overtime by Joth. And Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.